The Gospel is Luke 18, 1 through 8. This is what is often called the parable of the persistent widow, though some call it the parable of the unjust judge. This is a parable that Dr. Veltz, and What Does This Mean, identifies as a piety parable, where the main character is the widow, who would represent the Christian and what the Christian is supposed to do, and it's not Jesus establishing the kingdom. And in this parable, if you were to decode it, the place of God would be filled by this judge who in verse 6 is called the unrighteous judge, the unjust judge. And so here God is likened to an unjust judge, the Christian likened to a widow who keeps on coming to this unjust judge as she's seeking a verdict in her favor against her adversary. And the point actually Jesus gives Luke gives in the opening, and then Jesus gives in verse 8. This is a parable that I remember being preached many times as a boy growing up, both in Lutheran churches and then very often by televangelists on TV, as an example of keep praying for what you want and eventually you're going to get it. Wear God out, so you want that blessing, just keep praying to God and you'll get that blessing. And that does not seem to be the context here. So let's begin in 18 verse 1. This is about prayer, but not necessarily about praying for a Ferrari. And if I keep praying, God will give me a Ferrari. It's about praying for something else. So we begin with elegen de parabolein autois. So notice the imperfect. I take it sort of as inceptive. And he began to tell a parable to them. And now this to them would be his disciples. Back in chapter 17, he's been answering the Pharisees their question about where is the kingdom of God going to come. And that discourse end where he suddenly addresses his disciples, and so now the autois would be his disciples. So he began to tell them a parable, pros ta dein, notice pros plus the articular infinitive, and this is kind of awkward to translate into English, dein, this is the infinitive of that impersonal verb day. Usually we give it the dummy translation, it is necessary. So literally this would be sort of pros plus the articular infinitive is purpose. So in order, the act of it being necessary, and day will always take as its subject other infinitives. So here we have two infinitives that are the subject of ta dein, and that'd be, the first is pantata pros uxestai autus. So notice autus is accusative, subject of the infinitive, pros uxestai, which is subject of the infinitive dein. And so it is necessary for them always to pray. Notice present infinitive, focus on connection, always to pray. And then kai me ek kakein. This is the present infinitive of ek kakeo, contract verb. And this verb has the sense of to be discouraged, to lose heart, to give up. And so with the me, and not to be discouraged, and not to give up, and not to lose heart. And kind of awkward in the Greek, usually English will say, and he told them this parable. He told them a parable that it is always necessary to pray and not to give up, something to that effect. But notice who's praying. Well, it's them, the disciples. The day, that impersonal verb, has here two infinitives as its subject, always to pray and not to give up. And so this is going to be the point of the parable, how the disciples of Jesus are always to pray and not to become discouraged. And with what Dr. Seleska said about the Genesis passage there, you might bring into this the issue of the hidden God, where God is acting in ways that don't seem gracious, don't seem normal to us as people. We're going through persecution or suffering, and he doesn't seem to be answering us right away, and yet in the face of the hiddenness of God, our faithful response is always to pray and not to become discouraged. And so the parable begins in verse 2, saying, Krites tis ein en tene pole. There was a certain judge in a certain city. And now we have a parallel construction where we have the direct object of a participle and then an attributive participle two times. So, ton theon me phobumenos. So notice ton theon is the direct object of the participle. This is probably attributive. Notice the noun krites is an arthrist, and so are the participles. So there was a certain judge in a certain city who was not fearing God, who did not fear God. Kai anthropon me and trepamenos, and who did not And this is antrepo, passive voice, has the sense of to regard, to respect, and who did not regard or who did not respect man. Notice that Tom Theon has the article, so this is, you know, God with a capital G. Anthropon here is being used generally for anybody, for mankind. And now we know that this judge is an unrighteous judge in verse 6, because that's what Jesus calls him, Hakrates Hakdikios. He's the unrighteous judge. Or he's actually the judge of unrighteousness. And so we know that not fearing God is a bad thing. You know, for a judge not to fear God means he's not going to be really concerned with what God wants, with what God has commanded. Usually you might say not respecting man would be a good thing for a judge to do. You know, justice should be blind. But here it seems to have the negative connotation. He doesn't fear God, which is the right attitude to have, and he doesn't seem to care about people. That's what it probably has here, is this judge doesn't fear God and doesn't really care about people. And so he's, you might say, in it for himself. Okay, so there was a certain judge in a certain city who did not fear God and who did not regard man. And then verse 3, we get the second character, Kora de en te pole eke. And there was a widow in that city, kai erkata pras autan legusa. And again, notice the imperfect erkata. And she used to come to him, not just she came to him once, but she used to come to him, saying, ek dike san me apatu antidiku mu. Notice the aorist imperative, ek dike san. This is from ek dikeo, another contract verb. And this is, give me justice, give me the verdict of justice from my antidikos, from my adversary. And now this is a courtroom setting, which would be a lot different than ours today, where we would hire an attorney to represent our interests. This reflects what some people say still goes on in the Near East today, where you'd go directly to the guy, to the judge, the one who's supposed to give the verdict, and you would represent yourself. And so this widow, she, even if there were attorneys, she probably wouldn't be able to afford it, so she has to go directly to the judge herself and ask him to give her justice against her adversary. And verse 4, and so this is the context, this isn't an American court judicial context, but a Near East Palestinian context. So verse 4, Kai'uk ethelen epikronon. And he was not willing, epikronon, idiomatic for a while, for some time. And so she's coming to him, but he's not willing to do what she asks for a while. Going on, meta de tauta, ethan and hiato. But after these things, he said to himself, and this next statement is kind of funny, I think. You could do this in a story. I don't think if real people in real life do this, but he's now speaking to himself. Ekai tan theon u fubumai, uda anthropon, and trepomai. You know, so Kai here probably has a sense of even. So even if I do not fear God, no respect man, you know, and I don't know, I mean, would anybody actually, this is one of those things in the parable which is kind of, yeah, unrealistic. You know, this would be like, there was once a man who was a jerk and he used to pop balloons, and one day he said to himself, I'm a jerk. You know, I mean, like, you know, in other words, this guy's acknowledging, you know, the description that Jesus has given of him, and you have to stop and think, it is kind of funny, you know, so this guy's actually is fully self-aware. You know, even if I do not fear God and respect man, but the whole point of this is to get to why he's going to make, to render the verdict. He, in his own self-awareness, he's not going to do what the widow wants because he fears God or because he cares about people, because he himself admits right out, I don't, right? Yeah, in the parable. But verse 5, Diageta parekein moi kapon tain koron tautain. And so here we have dia plus the articular infinitive, which expresses cause, on account of the act of this widow causing me kopon, causing me work, causing me burden, causing me trouble, on that account. Because this widow is bringing me, causing me trouble, ek dike so, I will render her the verdict. I will give her the verdict. Now we have hena plus the subjunctive, so hena me eis telos erkamene hupo piazzo me. Notice the subjunctive is hupo piazzo. Yeah, that's what goes with the henna. So we have and the henna may goes with that. We have a participle clause in the middle. So in order that she will not trouble me, ace telos erkame, coming to me, ace telos, into completion, or here most people forever. So that she will not wear me out, coming to me forever, right? And now this is now the reason why the judge is going to do what she says. And this is why he's so self-aware in this parable. I don't fear God, and I don't care about people, but to keep her from wearing me out, I'm going to do what she says, right? And so the idea is her persistence, in a sense, has paid off because she's kept coming and coming. And even if she hasn't made him fear God and she hasn't made him care about people, but she's bothered him to the point where he finds it burdensome and worrisome that she keeps coming to him. So now he's going to finally do what she wants. But notice that doing what she wants is not, give me blessings, Lord, give me blessings. But what she's asking for is, give me a verdict against my adversary. And now you could say, well, that verdict against your adversary could stand for any blessing a Christian wants. But as Jesus now interprets the parable, as he unpacks it, we see there's more going on than just praying for blessings. So verse 6, Epen de hakurios, and the Lord said, so now Jesus has finished the parable, and now he's going to unpack the parable for us. Akusatet ti ha krites tes akdikias lege. Hear what the judge of unrighteousness is saying. Hear what he says. And I wonder if this ha krites tes akdikias is one of those examples, you know, kind of a Semitic, you know, the mountain of holiness is the holy mountain. The judge of unrighteousness would be the unrighteous judge, which is often how it's translated into English. But to hear what the judge of unrighteousness is saying. And so he's into the parable, and now he points out what the judge is saying, which is, I don't fear God, I don't fear man, but because she, to keep her from wearing me out by coming to me forever, I'm going to give her her verdict. I'm going to do what she says. Verse 7, Hadethios ume poiese te ek dikesen ton eklekton autu. Okay, and so notice ume plus the subjunctive, or no way, Jose subjunctive, the emphatic negative. And notice that verse 7 is a question, and there's a break, there's a comma, but will surely God, and if we make it a question, will God surely not poiese, make or do, tain ek dikesen? Notice this is the noun that corresponds to that verb, ek dikao. This is ek dikesis, a third declension noun. Will he not do the judgment, the rendering of judgment? It could be the rendering of vengeance, but the rendering of judgment. Tone, eklekton auto, tone, boonton auto, hemeras kai nuktos, and then notice the comma there. The judgment of his elect, who, this is from boao, who are crying to him day and night. And English renditions often take verse 7 and make it two questions, but, and so that question mark there, they'll end the sentence with a question mark. This is the first question. Will God surely not make or do, give the rendering of justice of his elect who are crying to him day and night? And then we have kai makru thumei ep autois, and that verb makro thumeo, another eo contract verb, it usually means to be patient. And then Bedag suggests here that it doesn't mean to be patient, but not delay. Well, the question is, here it has the idea of not just to be patient, but perhaps to delay, which is how most people translate it here. And so the idea would be, and will he delay over them? You know, Jesus is asking the question, will God surely not give the rendering of justice of his elect who are crying to him day and night? And will he delay over them? In other words, the idea is he going to be patient over them? Is he going to wait for a long time? The question is asked, verse 8, Lego humen, I say to you, that hati poiese tain ekdikesen auton en take. I say to you that he will give the rendering of justice of them and take, and quickly. And so notice how this aspect of the parable actually is taken out, this whole idea of praying for justice. And notice that what are the elect asking for here? In a sense, they're asking for exactly the same thing the widow's asking for. You might say a rendering of justice against their adversaries. And the context here, since Jesus has been talking eschatology in the chapter before, the context here could very well be that this is a church that is undergoing suffering and persecution, and what they're praying for is deliverance from this. And, well, you know, we may not think about this, but then also that God would, you know, give us the right verdict over and against our enemies who are persecuting us. And of course, you know, I know as good, pious American Christians, we think, oh no, we want them to be saved too. Well, yeah, we do, but at the same time, when the church is undergoing persecution, there's also that desire that God would act in a decisive way to show that we are right and our persecutors are wrong. And this seems to be the context. So it isn't I want a Ferrari or I want blessings. I want, you know. And this, notice how often this parable is taken that way. Just keep praying to God and He'll listen to you and give in to what you're saying. But here it's more of the specific, you know, this context where I think it's a church undergoing persecution and suffering, looking for deliverance from that persecution, and with that God's righteous verdict that, you know, these are my people, these are my elect. And again, you know, notice this hiddenness of God and the unjust judge, who sometimes, from our perspective, it doesn't look like He cares. Nevertheless, Jesus is saying, always pray, never become discouraged. And so His answer is, you know, first part of verse 8 is, He will give them their justice and quickly. Now, the LW, the old lectionary, it ended at 8 verse 8, you know, which is kind of the promise that, no, God will act quickly. And that's why we're supposed to always pray and never become discouraged, is because we have a God who is going to hear, and even when He seems hidden, He will act quickly. But notice verse 8b, which is now added to the pericope. Plain hawios to anthropou, elthon. However, the Son of Man coming, ara then, hu reise, tain piston, epites geis. Will He find, then will He find faith on the earth? That verse was edited out of the old pericopal system, maybe because it seems a little negative, but here Jesus ends this by asking the question, however, when the Son of Man comes, will He find faith on the earth? In other words, this now is kind of the first verse is a promise to the disciples that God will act quickly to answer our prayers and give us the rendering of judgment against our adversaries. However, on the other hand, He kind of throws out this, you know, rhetorical question, which could be problematic, you know, that when the Son of Man comes, will He find faith on earth? In other words, are you going to listen to this parable, and are you going to persist in prayer and not become discouraged? Notice how in this parable, prayer is the faithful response to what God has done by calling these people to be His disciples, by calling them to be His elect. Prayer is a faithful response to that. And therefore, when they stop praying and when they become discouraged, that's a sign of faithlessness. And so the first half of verse 8 is the promise that God will hear and respond. Second half is this rhetorical question that kind of challenges the disciples. Are you always going to pray? Are you not going to lose heart? And I think that was edited out probably because it seemed negative in the LW. It should be here because not only does Jesus throw out the promise for why we should pray that God will hear and respond, and notice it's not praying for any blessing and God will give us whatever we ask for if we just keep asking for it long enough. It's actually for that retribution, for that justice, for that divine verdict on the last day, eschatological. On the other hand, He throws out the challenge. Maybe you're not going to persist. And so the question, will the Son of Man find faith, means when I come back, are you guys going to still be doing this? In the face of the hiddenness of God, are you going to nevertheless persist in faith and prayer? Or are you going to become discouraged? And so, you know, He like throws out the possibility that when He comes back, maybe there won't be any faith because we won't hear this parable and we won't persist. I'd say, you know, the prelocutionary force of this parable is that the disciples would in faith respond by always praying and not becoming discouraged, knowing that God will hear and respond, at least eschatologically in the end. And that last verse is sort of the warning. You know, that's the elocutionary force of that last half verse. It's a warning so that we would all the more persist in prayer and not become discouraged. So this is a text about prayer, though notice again, it's not praying for whatever blessing I want, but I think it's in a sense praying for divine justice. A suffering, persecuted church praying for divine justice, and in the end it directs our thoughts to the eschaton, the resurrection of the body, where we do see the elect are vindicated, just as Jesus is vindicated by His resurrection.